Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh is daf Mem, and we're holding it to Halakha Mishnah about quarter ways down, a little bit more. So what this Mishnah seems to be is a little bit a continuation, really, of the Mishnah we had on Lamed Ches. We're over there, we talked about a Nara Shenitarsa V'Nitgarsha. Remember we had the Machlokas between Rabbi Akiva as to whether she has a knas, and the knas goes to herself, knas la'atzma. We had Rabbi Akiva in the Braita that says that there is a knas, but the knas goes la'via. And then we had Rabbi Yossi that there's no knas at all. And somehow this Mishnah gets a little bit confused, because instead of talking about the same words, na'ara shenitar savinit garsha, it talks about a yitoma shenitar savinit garsha, which is, what in the world? A yitoma? I mean, a yitoma, what does it have to do with being nitar savinit garsha? Her father's not involved in the process at all. In the end, the Gemara is going to come out, and we might as well peek ahead so that this will make sense, the Mishnah, is that we're not talking about a yitoma who was nitar savinit garsha. We're talking about Yitoma as an idea. And the case over here is the case of a Nara that was Nitar Savanit Garsha. And what Rabbi Elazar says is that it depends. If there was a rape, then he's Chayiv to pay. And if there was a seduction, then he's Potter to pay. So now the Mishnah, just as it's written, just seems totally confusing. I mean, like, what in the world? Well, obviously, there can't, if she's really a Yitoma, so if it was a consensual relationship, well, obviously, Potter, I don't understand. She wanted to sleep with him. Well, why in the world should he pay? Who's he paying? There's no father if she's Yatoma. So like the whole Mishnah is. And so what is the Chiddush? As far as the din of Nitar Savanit Garsha, I mean, we already know Nitar Savanit Garsha. Oh, my Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. You need to understand what's going on over here. This is actually a very subtle Mishnah. And Rabbi Elazar here, who is Rabbi Elazar ben Shemoah, as we'll see, was actually saying this, trying to bring out the shita of Rabbi Akiva, who was his Rebbe. Remember that the five Chachamim that Rabbi Akiva, this is why we spoke about this on Lag BaOmer, the Yulo Tamidim Beziknuto, was that at the end of Rabbi Akiva's life, he was able to give the Torah that had been totally destroyed over to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, who of course was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shemoah, who is the Rabbi Elazar that we're speaking about right now. So that Rabbi Elazar, as Rabbi Bar Bar Chana says, Rabbi Yochanan explained it, that the point over here is that Rabbi Elazar is trying to show how the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva, of course, is the whole point of being the Rebbe of Rabbi Elazar ben Shemoah. And that Rabbi Akiva, you'll remember, back in the Mishnah Lamed Ches, was the shita that there is knas by an ones of a nitarsa v'nitgarsha, and the knas accrues to herself. Now, you remember that the machlokas over there was in terms of how to understand the words in the pasuk, nara, that is eina meurasa. According to Rabbi Akiva, that was only coming to tell us that you could be doresh the gzeirah shava. And all it was saying is, if it's a Nara, she'ina me'urasa, then it goes to the father. If it was a Nara who had gone through erusin and then got divorced, so that obviously Zochi Misa now, then it goes to herself. That was Rabbi Akiva. Now, what it is that Rabbi Elazar ben Shemoah is teaching us is precisely that, that there is knas, ha'ones chayav, but that it goes to her, exactly like Rabbi Akiva says. How do I see that in this Mishnah, says Rabbi Yochanan? I'll tell you. Explain to me what you think the meaning of the word yitoma shenitar savanit garsha. I mean, the word yitoma is absurd. If he's really coming to tell us that she has no father, So it's pshita that it goes, I don't understand. There's no one else in the way. It's pashit that a mefate is potter, isn't it? Because the mefate is consensual. That's what the word mefate means. So how would he pay for a consensual relationship? And therefore, it can't be that he's coming to tell us something that any two-year-old knows. Elohaka mashmalam. The narash and itarsav and itgarsha is kiyetoma. So in other words, what the whole point that Rabbi Elazar is making here in this Mishnah is that a woman who was nitarsa v'nitgarsha is ipso facto a yetoma, even though she's not really a yetoma b'chayeha av. So now we have three definitions of yetoma as it's used in the Gemara. We could have a yetoma who has no father. We could have a yetoma who has no father legally. How is that? That the father lost all of his rights here in the money that would be coming in and the Maisi Adayim and so on and so forth of his daughter, and that he can no longer sell her and he can no longer be in a position of making the Kiddushin for her. When would that be? That would be where she actually was married. She was Nisait and she got divorced from that marriage or her husband died. Once her father had given her to a man, that's it. She is no longer his daughter legally for him to have any rights over. Okay, that's yetoma b'chayei av. There's other yetomot b'chayei av. It's older. But in any event, there's a third fascinating definition now, and that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Shammoa is coming to teach us. That according to my Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, the word yetoma is the definition of a nitarsa v'nitgarsha. Amazing. So that since the Torah was mechadesh legabe the dinim of knas, that she is considered to be a yetoma and no longer, as my Rebbe explained, no longer does the knas go to her father. So what that is saying effectively is that she has no father legally, only vis-a-vis this one issue. Does the knas go to her, or does it go to the father? Now, the question is, Rabbi Yisai, is this only a din in the knas? Or does it mean that in the same way that the knas goes to her, so too the boshet upagam goes to her? Now, that is not so pashut. What happens to the boshet and the pagam? So, basically, when it says amifateh patur, so a mifateh patur obvious means potter from anything, right? And then, even though what we're talking about asher lo arasa, that's in the pasuk of knas. However, basically says the Rosh, all of the tashlumin are compared one to another, and that's been tesis shita throughout the whole sugya. Now, the Rambam follows the shita of the Rimigash. Remember, I told you that the Rimigash was the Rambam's father's Rebbe, and the Rambam met the Rimigash, and the Rambam speaks about the Rimigash in his Hakdama to the Pirush HaMishnayos, and the things that he says about him are absolutely mind-boggling, because what he says is that somebody who has met the Rimigash sits in total terror of his mind. Lev ha'ish ha'hu b'talmud mav'il. Mav'it, according to some translations. It's terrifying to see someone with that level of intelligence. You feel like you've been completely smashed through the head. Now, for the Rambam to write that about someone is also mind-boggling, right? It's like one of the greatest geniuses ever, and he says it's utterly terrifying to see such a person. So Lamaisa, he paskins almost always like the Rimigash, and the Rimigash's shita in this sugya is that obviously it has nothing to do with Borges Upagam, because as we're going to see very soon, the whole basis of Borges Upagam is that the father has the rights to Borges Upagam because he has the rights to actually inflict that Borges Upagam. Does? Yes. The Torah gave him the right to accept Kiddushin from whoever he wants for his daughter, correct? So that means that theoretically, if he wants to accept Kiddushin from the world's filthiest, most disgusting human being, he could do so. And he could make it a kedusha that would be done specifically with intercourse. Says, yeah, okay, you pay me enough, I give you my daughter, go sleep with my daughter and make her your wife. So that means that the father himself theoretically would be capable of causing his daughter legally that bosha tupagam, and therefore, of course, he has the rights to the bosha tupagam. Now, how the heck, says the Rimigash, would that possibly be affected by the fact that if she was nit'arsa before, that he doesn't get the rights to knas? Did he lose his rights to accept kedushin for his daughter, Gershi? No, he did not lose those rights, and therefore the svara still obtains. Same way we said before, nothing has changed. This is a very specific din of yitomah that only is nogea knas. That's the point of the whole sugya. So, and this is the way the Rambam paskins. Absolutely. So, and not only that, I mean, it's very clear from the Yerushalmi also, like the Rambam. As a matter of fact, I mean, even there are even achronim that say that the Rosh who argued must not have had the Yerushalmi, because we find that many Rishonim did not have access to the Yerushalmi. So if he would have had access to the Yerushalmi, the Korah, he would have passed in this way. But anyway, there are those who say, on the contrary, that if that's the case, then what is Rabbi Elazar adding? Rabbi Akiva already said his halacha. So what's he coming to add with this Mishnah, Beshitas Rabbi Akiva Rabba? That's Gufa the Pshat, that he's adding the Tashlumin in general, that since all of the Tashlumin are compared one to another. So Mamela, if there's a Ptur of Knas, then there would be a Ptur on Bosha Subagam. Okay, anyway, that's just the background to the general question. What exactly are we referring to when we call her a Yitoma? She's obviously not truly a Yitoma because the father can still go out and can still accept Kiddush. So, but anyway, this is how Rabbi Yochanan explained the Mishnah very beautifully. That Allaha Kamashmalan, the Narash and Itarsa Venit Garsha, has the same din as a Yitoma. Ma Yitoma La Atzma, Af Narash and Itarsa Venit Garsha La Atzma. Now, Gavi, this is a trick card for you to write down, because in the definition of a Yitoma, there will be, in fact, three different explanations. There would be a Yitoma vis-a-vis the schus of the father for everything. Then there's this particular yitoma vis-a-vis the question of dafka knas or possibly even boshes upkam, but not legabe the other rites. And then there's a yitoma where there's literally a yitoma in which there is no father at all. And that opens up completely different issues, namely that the rabbanim were metaken, the din of a ketana becoming married as a mima'enet. That's a whole different thing. So this is something that people generally are really not aware of, that the point that Rabbi Elazar ben Shemoah is making is to expand our definition of that word yitoma, that's very important. Okay, continues the sugya. Now this, therefore, is the whole point. Omer Rabbi Zeira, Omer Rabbi Barshila, Omer Rabbi Rav Hamnuna Saba, Omer Rav Ada Bar Ahava, Omer Rav, look, we paskin like Rabbi Elazar, and Rav used to call Rabbi Elazar Tuvina de Chachimi, the most enriched of all of the Chachamim. You just feel a richness when you're there, like everything being taken into consideration. It's like, so Tuvina is the Targum of Ashrei. Ashrei is like the Rabbi Nubachir says, we don't use the word Ashrei for someone who has one mila. We use the word Ashrei, which is why it's a Lashon Rabim, Ashrei, in so many different ways. So it's a lashon of mu'ushar. And that means that this is a person who's just so deeply full of fulfillment and of happiness and so on. That's Rabbi Elazar ben Shemoah. Beautiful, beautiful side point, but just gives you a whole different sense of your presence in the flow of Torah. And now we're ready for our kapitan. Ezehu Boshet. So now getting on to the other Tashlumim, how exactly would we be able to determine the level of payment which is Boshet? There is no set way. Every particular interrelationship of Boshet is defined by the people that are involved. If the one who was Midbayesh is a person of great stature who was belittled, then that would be more painful than the garbage collector who was insulted by a passing taxi cab driver, right? So now the question would be, who is the one that was Mivayesh? I mean, if the person who was Mivayesh was, let's say, the king can say things to anybody, you know what I mean? I mean, you don't feel completely belittled. I mean, you feel terrible, but it's not as if some stom jerk said that to you. I mean, you know, the king is always right. Yes, sir, that's true. I am an idiot. I mean, because everybody's an idiot, Klape, what the king sees it that way. I mean, it's not so terribly embarrassing to be an idiot. And however, if it would be someone of your own level, then it would be extremely insulting. And how about if the garbage collector yelled at you, "Hey, chatichat zevel"? Who cares? That's his life, is chatichat zevel. So thanks, you know, makes no difference. So what's the? I don't know. That's not so partial. I have to tell you that one of the most powerful things to me was the morning after I arrived in Eretz Yisrael. And it was an amazing experience. It's now 60 years. And the next morning I was outside on the street and I see a garbage truck driving by, right? This was the old garbage trucks before they had garbage trucks that ate up the garbage and so on. A garbage truck was a truck full of garbage. And there was the garbage guy was on top of all of the zevel in the back of the truck. And I see the garbage man. And it's a Taimani with long peis and a beautiful beard. And this is the guy that's sitting there on top of the garbage truck. And I think to myself, my God, if this is the garbage man, imagine what everybody else must be. I was like, so what a fella. So who's to say? What an image that was. It's like yesterday. Anyway, so therefore, everything would be dependent on the Mivayesh and Mitbayesh. Now, there's some Rishonim who say that in this case, where we're talking about a sexual violation, it's not true. Because over there, the lower class that the person is, the more violated the woman feels. And therefore, we don't apply the normal thing that, well, if it's somebody very low class, it's irrelevant. It's more relevant. It's very interesting that the question over here is the specific nature of how the woman would experience that violation, you know? So in a sense, somebody that is completely irrelevant, like, doesn't matter. But in another sense, there's a greater violation or just some slob, you know? So you can see it both ways. This is Mamash Machlokas Rishonim, and it's a profound insight into what precisely the getter of Busha would be. Now, what's pagam? Pagam is the damage to her actual market value. So we see her as if she's for sale. Kama hayta yafa, what was she worth as a bitula? And what is she worth now as a bula? Now, we're going to discuss this later on because it doesn't seem to make any sense. If you're buying a shifcha, supposedly you're buying her to work in your house, you know, what difference does it make if she's a bitula or bula? All of this the Gemara is going to discuss. And Tosus will point out that this is insane. How can you possibly call pagam of a Jewish princess the equivalent of a shifcha? Why would that be the pagam? So we'll talk all about that in the Gemara and Amid Beis. Knas is shaveh b'chol adam. The knas doesn't matter who or what or where. It's all set by the Torah. And you should know as a general rule that kol sheyesh la kitzba min haTorah is always shaveh b'chol adam. When the Torah defines something, it's defining some existential reality which pays absolutely no attention to the specifics of the way that this particular phenotype was expressive. It doesn't matter. We're not talking about a phenotype. So, how do you know, says the Gemara, that when the Torah says that you have to pay chamishim kesev, how do we know that that's not a set payment that covers everything? In other words, once he's going to pay knas, maybe he doesn't pay separately boshet u'pagam. So maybe 50 sla'im amarachmana bekomile, that covers the entire bill. Omer Rabbi Zeiro, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, how could it be that a person who rapes a royal family member, Bat Melachim, so he's going to pay 50 shekel, and somebody who rapes the garbage man's daughter, he pays 50 shekel? Again, that doesn't seem to make sense. Yomru ba'al bat melachim 50, ba'al bat hedyotot 50. Amalei, what kind of crazy argument is that? You could say the same thing about shloshim shelevet, okay? What's the difference in shloshim shelevet? A shor muad that kills somebody else's evet. The Torah says, gzerata katuv, you pay shloshim shekel. And as we said, anything that has a kitzva minat Torah, that's defined as the knas. And over there, it's the totality of the payment. So you could say the same thing. I understand. So you killed your shor, killed an eved who was the world's greatest expert in programming with the latest language. And he's the only one that basically knows how to take care of these kinds of data sets. The guy's work is worth $10,000 an hour, and you're going to pay $30 for his life. And on the other hand, he goes and kills an eved that can barely move, and the only thing he's good for is every once in a while doing a half-baked job at serving something at a table, and you're going to pay the 30 shekels for the same. You can make the same argument. And the Torah said, that's the way it is. Shloshim. That's the bill. That's the full bill. So Omer Rabbi Zeira, Omer Le'abayah to Rabbi Zeira, Yachi, Gabi Eved Nami, you could say. On the one hand, you've got an eved who's no cave margaliot. This guy is a expert diamond worker. He knows how to polish a diamond so that his work is, oh my gosh. That's what the Ramchal used to do for a living. This is serious stuff. So you're going to pay shloshim shel eved for that. And an eved osema semachar. On the other hand, you've got a guy that knows how to sew up a cuff, you know, on your pants. So for this guy, you're going to pay 32? That's no meaning, says Rabbi Zera, at all. Ella, the point is, Amr Rabbi Zera, I'll tell you what, the issue over here, yes, there is a real issue. And that issue has to do not with what I said, Bat Melachim, that's not the point, but the question is the event of the same person could be different. That's what I meant. Let's imagine a case like this. We have a girl who was violated and was raped, but she was raped anally, okay? She doesn't lose her betulim. So now if another guy comes along and rapes her vaginally, he's going to be chayev. Now, I mean, surely a woman who was raped, I don't care how she was raped, but she's not going to be the same type of rape. Now, I'm talking about the same level of violation, you see. I'm not talking about the other coincidentals, where you're right. A knas doesn't pay attention to coincidentals. But over here, we're not talking about a coincidental. This is a different type of rape. So where she was already violated anally, so it's a different rape of violating her vaginally. If she was never violated, so she was never violated. There's a whole difference of a woman who's never gone through a rape, obviously, in terms of her violation. Okay, let's just talk about the violation itself, the takad asherina. Now, is that different or is that not different? Doesn't it make sense that there are other issues that we need to take into consideration in terms of the mites itself? So therefore, where is that going to be covered? That's only going to be covered in the issue of pagam and in boshas and so on, right? That's the difference. And therefore, there must be allowances for differences in the mice per se. That's what I'm saying. So ilubo aleil shnayim. Let's say we have two people raping the same woman. Echad kedarka ve'echad shelo kedarka. Now that's the pashtus, okay? And that's how Tosus understands it. All over we have this. And the order of events is wrong. The first guy was actually a rapist shelo kedarka. And the second one took the same woman and raped her kedarka. But Rashi learns, for some reason, even though Tosis proves from so many sugyas, that the halacha is that so long as this girl has not lost her betulim, because the Gemara says beferish, if the woman is gang raped and she's gang raped anally, every single one of the rapists pays the knas. because she never ended up being a non-betula in an anal rape, right? So for some reason, Rashi says over here that even though it seems to be talking about the same woman, but what Rashi understands is that we're talking about, the same guy, that we're talking about the difference between a woman who had been raped by a third party and now this guy rapes her, where she had been previously anally raped and now he rapes her normally, versus a woman who had not been raped by a third party. So in other words, apparently Rashi has a problem with saying that you would be chayev for subsequently raping her after she was anally violated, okay? Which Tosfos shows for many sugyas doesn't make any sense. But anyway, just be aware of the fact that we've got a problem. This problem occurs in many places where this sugya comes up between Rashi and Tosfos. So therefore, there must be a difference. Omalei Abaye, well, excuse me, but you could say the same difference by the Eved. I understand that the question of his being a computer programmer versus his being a waiter is not nogea, because that's coincidental. And I understand your definition of the difference in the case per se. But you could make the same difference in the case per se, Rabbi Zeira. You could say an Eved, you could have an Eved who's a real strong and very healthy guy. And you get an Eved who's basically half dead and he's on his deathbed. You could say the same thing. So over there, you're telling me there's no difference. And forget about the incidentals. This is not an incidental. This is the extent of what the Eved is. So you could say the same thing. An Eved who's healthy, shloshim. And an Eved who's a mukashchina, shloshim. That doesn't make sense. I'll tell you. We know the answer because we've seen it before on numerous occasions. The beautiful, beautiful diuk of tachat asher ina. What the Torah says is v'natana isha shochevim alav yanara chamishim kesev tachat asher ina. Well, obviously it's tachat asher ina. I don't understand. What are we talking about? Stop giving your father a gift? I mean, we're talking about the case of a rapist. Ha ha. The point is that all of this money of the chamishim kesev pays for one thing and one thing only. Only the sexual component. Anything else is like any other assault and battery. All normal things have to be paid. And therefore, the boshet and the pagam are paid separately. And the Torah points this out and allows us to parse the payments as they were meant. Don't give me this logic which does not apply, Rabbi Zera. And therefore, the whole idea is Michlal de Ika Boshet Upkam, and we saw also on a few occasions Rava. Rava says, the Pasuk says, V'natana isha shochev ima chamishim kesef. Well, who do you think is going to pay? The ish that wasn't shochev ima? The guy at the desk in the motel? I don't understand. Obviously, the isha shochev ima. So what are you stressing on shochev ima? That's the point. That he's paying for the fact of hana'at shchiva and only for that. Michlal, the ika, boshet, upagam, there are other payments to be made. That's the point. Beautiful. Now, yukataina, okay. So then if you have parsed the payments into the knas component versus the boshet, upagam component. So then tell me, how do you know that it's meant to be given to the father? If, in fact, it remains the same din as the standard payments for assault and battery, why isn't it given to her? Where did you get the idea that the payment to the father, if the knas is not all-inclusive, then the separate payments, as you've proven that there are separate payments, where does it say that they go to the father? Maybe they go directly to her? So therefore, Ema Ledida, maybe we should pay her directly. Omar Kra, in order to clarify that, in the dinim that tell us, we saw before, there's an entire body of interrelationships, bein av lebito, bein ish leishto. Remember, the Torah makes this very strange and very powerful interrelationship of the father's presence in a girl's life that is connected to the husband's presence in a girl's life. And as a matter of fact, even describes a gradual transference of responsibility that we just saw yesterday. An arusa, what's the din of the arusa? Avia ubala mefirin et nedarea. You have that transition in which you need both of them together. that these are very profound psychological and existential issues in the whole interrelationship that the Torah sums up as so beautifully. Bein av libito and bein ish leishto. Now that is something that we saw is very nogea right now, this period of the year. The whole period of the year that we're dealing with has to do with Yiftach and his daughter and Nedarim and the implications of that for women in general, which is why the Betulot every year made this a yearly, an annual festival, so to speak, which turned into the Arba Taniyot, Arba Pamim B'Shana L'Tanon. I mean, it's unbelievable. This was experienced by every person as something that is a profound psychological trauma that needs to be lived through in the violation of what appeared to be the Torah's protection of a daughter from someone who refused to get a petach, and so on and so forth. By the way, notice that the petach of a neder is so fundamental to the words that we use in our mesechet in terms of petach patuach. But in any event, these issues are profoundly interrelated. So if the Torah says at the end of the parsha of Nidarim, so what does it say? Ela chukim asher tziva Hashem et Moshe ben ish leishto ben av lebito bineureha beit avia. What is the meaning of those additional words, bineureha beit avia? It defines the state of neurim, which is the state of blossoming pubescence. That's the idea of the neureha. And that is part of beit avia, which means that kol shevach neureha leavia, all of those special rites that come in while she's a nara, which includes the rites over here to the money for the boshas and for the pagam and for the knas, of course, everything, including the rites to the bittul of her, the hatara of her hafara, of her nidorim, all of that is interrelated. And therefore, since this is part of the shevach neurim, then therefore the father gets it. Wait a minute. So then if that's the case, if kol shevach neurei l'avia, how do you explain the fact that Rav Huna quotes Rav as saying, how do we know that when a daughter goes to work, that her income goes to her father? Shenemar, it says, b'feresh v'chim korin shet bito la'ama. So that means that a man has the right to sell his daughter's works. So then that means that he owns that work, just like the Amama Aseya Del Rabbah. So what is he selling? He's selling to this guy that's buying her as an Amma the rights to whatever it is that she's producing. If he wants to put her on a production line of making beautiful scarves, and that's what she's skilled at. So the owner now gets to keep the income from those beautiful scarves, having paid for the worker. So then that means that the father owned that work. So if she made beautiful scarves when she was in her father's house, her father owns that income. So that follows by definition from the halacha of mechira tabat. Avbat ma'aseh yadeha le'aviyah. But according to you, what do I need this for? I don't need the logic. I have a pasuk. The pasuk says, bineureha beit aviyah. You said bineureha beit aviyah means kol shevach neurim. I've already had my drinks. Thank you very much, Barney. So what is the meaning, therefore? You don't look. All you do is hold up a cup, and you have no idea what you're looking at. You have no idea what your cups are for. You haven't kept a measurement. I don't understand. Maybe it's just chamishim. Maybe it's chamishim shekel, and that's all everything. Maybe. How do you know?
Rebbe's saying I'm not holding cup.
Exactly. Very good. Very good. Okay, that deserves a drink. Well, that cup that you were holding seemed to have been filled with some good scotch. It's a nice color. Let's see you drink it down, Barnea. It's a good 3 ounces. Then we can find the true Barnea. Okay, so anyway, so what do we need all of this stuff for? It says Binurea Beit Aviyah, typically Binurea Beit Aviyah. Why'd you come up with such a complex limud? Ella, what is Rav going to tell you? Rav's going to tell you, well, obviously, that pasuk doesn't prove anything about this. That pasuk was talking about Hafarat Nedarim, right? How can you bring a raya from that parsha to the sugya we're talking about? There's nothing in common. Now, you'll say, well, maybe we can use it as a model. So v'chi teima telef mina, let's learn out from the rights to Nedarim and let's apply it to the dinim of mama. And you can't learn out this. We've had many times. Gavi, please write this down while you're driving. No, don't. But please remember to write down the general klal. Mamona mi isura lo yalfinan. We do not learn out dinim momenes from dinim that the Torah gives us, l'gabi iser, and the dinim of Nedarim, of course, are iser, not momen. So you'll say, okay, so let's apply the dinim of knas, which is momen, and learn it out of the knas. That if the knas is given to the father, so then the same thing should be true about these other things. No, momona miknasa lo yalfinan. Another thing to write down. We do not learn momon out of knas. So therefore, how do we know that a father has the right to maisi yadea? Still, the question stands. Therefore, says Rav, I'm giving you a beautiful answer from the fact of mechira, not from bineurem beit avia. So you have to admit, therefore, that I do not have a pasuk. So now I'm back to my question. How do you know that Bosha Simpkam goes to the father? Maybe they're like any tashlum and they go to the victim. Ella, the point is, as we explained before, Mistavra de Aviahavi, as we were talking about the Rambam and the Rimigash, it only is reasonable that it goes to the father because the father is able to legally do to her what this rapist did. He can sell her to essentially a rapist. He takes the most disgusting person in the world, makes a deal with him that you can be Makadesh, my daughter, by sleeping with her. And he's caused her the same embarrassment and the same pagam. And that was given to him biado, theoretically. So therefore, if someone does it, that's his thing. And therefore, it's given to her. Now, the Mishnah said a pagam, so we take a look, what's her value on the open market? Well, I don't understand how exactly would the fact that she's a bu'ula change her value on the open market? I mean, what is a person who's buying a shifcha, what does he care about whether she's a bu'ula or a bitula? Omer avuad Shmuel, well, the open market would be, kama adam rotzeh litein ben shifcha bitula le shifcha bu'ula to be mishamishim. What? I understand. What do I care about her sexual status when she's serving me at the table? That doesn't make any sense. Shifcha bu'ula. The Shamsho makes a difference to him. My nafka laimina, when is it, was he going to put a big sign on her? This lovely virgin is serving you today a cup of coffee. And therefore what? So therefore you expect to get a bigger tip because you're a virgin? What in the world is the difference? My nafka laimina, what does he care? Ela ben shivcha bu'ula le shivcha she'ina bu'ula la hasiya lavdo. Listen, obviously, let's not beat around the bush. Obviously, we're talking about paying for her sexual value. And obviously also when we said l'shamsho, that's what it would meant. Except we can't acknowledge that because you're not allowed to sleep with the shifcha. But clearly the market of a shifcha is going to be defined by her sexual value. Because that's what people are buying her for very often. So if that's the case, what's the justification of recognizing that as a legal right? If it's illegal, it's not illegal. Suppose a guy owns an evet, and he very much admires the work that this evet does for him. As Rashi says, the guy is very zoriz. He always tries to do his very best to get things done well. So he wants to buy his evet a gift. What better gift is there than a lovely virgin? A wonderful gift, right? So he wraps her up. And there's a big red ribbon. She comes in with FedEx. The guy splits the ribbon. And there she goes, popping out of the box. Hello, I am yours. Surrounded by a bunch of wonderful whipped cream, whatever it is you put in the cake. It makes no difference. You want to imagine the scene? You can imagine that a guy would be willing to pay quite a bit for that. Now, obviously, how many times is it that somebody wants to buy a sex gift for an evet that he likes so much? But that it essentially gives us the right to define the market. That's the point. And so it's clear that the market is sexually defined, in which case the bitula and the bu'ula make all the difference in the world, just like they always do. Now, Tosas raises the question over here. I mean, I really think that this is the underlying pshat in the whole idea. It's not because when we said the Shamsho originally, I mean, come on, the Gemara is playing games, no? When it says, what do you mean? What does he care if she brings in the cake? Come on, you know what I'm talking about. But the point is that I can't know what you're talking about because that cannot be what I'm going to be b'chayev of you to pay. You see? So as Tosis puts it over here, when you say how much a guy would be willing to pay for a shivcha, so as Tosis says, does this make sense to you? This is ridiculous. I mean, a shivcha is ipso facto not going to be worth very much in terms of her status. So he's giving an eved this incredible woman who is a princess, right? And you're going to say, yeah, but okay, but the princess part doesn't matter. We're only worried about what would a sex object be worth. How does that cover the princess? I don't understand. What does that have to do with her pagam? Now, this is something that in general is a problem of valuating the reduction of value in terms of a generic shivcha instead of the individual. I mean, we would never do that in terms of other nezek. So therefore, Tosu says, of course, every case goes according to the level of the woman. And it would be, what would a person pay for someone of this stature and status? But it still has to be defined as a sexual object, because otherwise, what's the difference between a bu'ula and a bitula? That's the point. So therefore, I reduce it to this question of a woman for sale. I don't want to talk about a woman who's not for sale. But if theoretically, imagine that a guy has an eved who used to be the king of Persia, right? And now he's been reduced to being an eved because he was captured by the Jews. Don't I want to give the king of Persia a princess as a sexual gift? I'm going to give him some stupid person. He won't even look at her. That's the point. So every case like this can be justified on that basis, you see? So that's how Tosis explains this. It makes perfectly good sense on that level, and therefore it truly would be an evaluation of her pagan. Okay, so it's, yeah, making me trouble again. Okay, Barnea's done it again. He catches me and then he goes ahead and punishes me.
Isn't it fascinating though?
Yes, it is. But honestly, I would want a Zahir. For an Evet, that's what you need. A guy who just does things, but does things without any real understanding of what he needs care for, is a bull in a china shop. I wouldn't let him into my house. So it makes a lot of sense. And remember that the Zariz can only come after the Zahir. Okay, that's why. It's all we need. There's all kinds of Zarizim all over the place. They're disasters. Stay away from them. Alrighty. I think we are ready for the next amazing moment of our sleeping or eating Capitan, who again hasn't shown us the view. Ugh.
What can I say?
Nobody's even going to know the difference when you're in Richie's Island or when you're in a basement somewhere. Nobody's going to know the difference. No, there's wood in the old city even. No. There, at least Akiva's showing us. Kol makom. Now, we've discussed this Mishnah before, remember? Kol makom sheyesh mecher ein knas, v'kol makom sheyesh knas ein mecher. Remember that this is Rabbi Meir Shita, and we've been exposed to this on numerous occasions, that where the Torah allows a father to sell a child, there she's a ketana, by definition. Why by definition? Because the moment that she presents simonim and she's a nara, she goes free on the basis of simonim, right? So if she would go free when she's already sold, so obviously after bringing these simonim, she can't be sold. That would be crazy. And therefore, it's a given, as a Dover Pashit, that there would be no Mecher after she presents Simonei Naharot. But while she can be sold as a ketana, then there is no knas. According to Rabbi Meir, v'chol makob sheyesh knas, if there's a knas and she's a nara, then by definition, ein mecher, which means a ketana can be sold, but there's no din of paying a knas if she's raped. A nara, yesh la knas, but ein la mecher. Once she's a bogeret and she's post 6 months after presenting simanei naros, then ein la lo mecher v'lo knas. Om Rav Yudah Amar Rav, just to clarify, this is only true according to Rabbi Meir. But the Chachomim have taught us, yesh la knas b'mokom mecher, even as a ketana, there's a knas. The Tanya, ketana mi bat yom echad, va'ad shetavi shtei sarot, I don't care how old she is. She can be sold, and I don't care whether she's Ru'uya Leviyah. I don't care if she's just born today. She can still be sold until such time that she has simanim. Yesh la mecher, but ein la knas. There is no knas, according to Rabbi Meir. Only when mishtavishtei sarot, after she becomes a nara, and then 6 months, ad shetibager, as we saw before from Shmuel, then she has a knas, but then it's too late to sell her because she was already yotze b'simanim. Divrei Rabbi Meir, Shaya Rabbi Meir, Omer, komakom sheish mecher ein knas, v'komakom sheish knas ein mecher. That's all Rabbi Meir's deal. But anyway, not everybody agrees with that, because the Chachomim omrim, ketana, it's true that she doesn't get a knas before she's 3 years old, because she has to be Ru'uya Leviyah, and it has to be that her betulim means something, and that's only after she's three that her betulim wouldn't be chozrim. So ketana mibat shalosh shanim v'yom echad, I agree with you, after the age of three, until she actually is a bogeret, the entire period, yesh la knas. Wait a second, she only has a knas? Are you denying that there's a din of mecher and that a father could have sold her from the time before she was three? How come you're not talking about that? And obviously not. Come on, guys, you know what I mean. Ema, af knas b'mokam mecher. They're adding to what Rabbi Meir said. There, once she's 3 years old, she even gets a knas, which Rabbi Meir denied. Om Rav Chista, my time, but Rabbi Meir, how do I know that a ketana is not shayach to getting knas? Because it says in the pasuk itself of knas, in the case of an ones, it says v'lo tihye le'isha. V'lo tihye is talking about her ability to make herself available as a wife, tihye le'isha, which means that she has to be capable of entering into that relationship as a kinyan of havaya, but she's only capable of that as a fully reached puberty nara, because as a ketana, she does not have kinyanim, and she cannot be mahava atatzma. And therefore, the very fact that it says, tiyeh le'isha, b'mahava atzma katuv b'daber, the Torah is only addressing a case where she is old enough to effectuate the state of havaya on her own. So why did the Rabbanan hold that it's still even for a ketana? Because the Torah writes na'ara. And look how it writes na'ara, without that last hey. Now, wherever the Torah writes the word na'ara, as if it's without a hey, it's basically saying that we don't notice if she's a boy or a girl. That's what it's saying. She's a na'ara, yeah, but can you look at her and know? I mean, if she'd be walking around with short hair and a t-shirt, you'd know the difference? No, you wouldn't know the difference. You'd think she's a boy. So that is the na'ar. I actually had an incredible experience of this. My wife dressed up. Gabi, you remember this. You were sitting next to me. This is like 50 years ago. My wife dressed up my daughter as a boy for Purim, right? And it's Purim morning. And she comes into the Beis HaMedrash. Well, she's 5 years old, whatever. And I say to Gabi, my gosh, who is that gorgeous kid? I've never seen such a beautiful kid. I had no idea who it was. It was my daughter. But I thought it was somebody's son. Okay. So it's Mamish Na'ara. She couldn't believe that. I didn't know who she was. But if that's the case, says Shmuel, that's the point. why does it write it that way? To tell me that she cannot be limited to being a Nara. She could even be a Kitana. Afilu Kitana b'mashma. So Rav Papa Bereda Rav Chanan, he comes from Barnea's neighborhood, Bei Kaluchit, and he went and said this over, this Nara, Nara deal, he said it over to Rav Shimi Barashi. And Rav Shimi Barashi says, no, you ruined the whole story. It's much nicer than that, okay? Here's how we heard Reish Lakish, and it's brilliant. Listen to this. We learned it like this. Reish Lakish said about the case of a Motzi Shemra, that if you're Motzi Shemra on a katana, you're potter. Why? Because it says, V'natnu la'aviha na'ara. And over there, it uses a hay. So since it uses a hay, it means a nahara malei dibera katuv. It's only where she's a completely developed nahara with a hay at the end, right? So Ravada Barava said, I understand. That's how you know that it doesn't apply to a katana? That's ridiculous. And if it wouldn't have written it that way, time it a katav rachmana nahara halav achi, what would you say? That even a katana has a din, a motzi shemra? But the pasuk says, "V'im emet hayadavar hazeh lo nimtzu betulim l'nara v'otziu et hanara al petach bet avius kalua." And then if it was a true story, then we should take her out and we should give her skila. And if she's a ketana, she would be chayiv. Ketanas labat onashim. Ella, that's the point that Reish Lakish was making. He was saying like this. We all understand from the pasuk itself that obviously we are not talking about a ketana. Because it says that she will be punished. The katana wouldn't be punished, right? So now I ask you, says Reish Lakish, how come all over when we're talking about a nara, it's always spelled without a hay? And how come over here it is spelled with a hay? That's the point. The Torah is telling you where we could only be talking about a fully developed nara who's already past the stage of katnut. See? I write it with a hay. From there we derive that all the cases where it isn't written with a hay, from there we derive that it doesn't limit her to be Nara Malea Katuv Medaber. It just means the child.